Sister Marina, or Avshlita, thank you. It's by courtesy of my wife who insisted that if you're going to have a share around the breakfast on chocolate, then you have to serve chocolate. So I said to her, why didn't you say that when we did a share about onions and garlic? Well, at least you could have obliged when we had a share about drinking beer. Anyway, in our house, well, in Halacha, there's a din about Issur Yichud, and many apply this nowadays to the internet. In our house, there's an Issur Yichud with chocolate. Since chocolate is now on the table, I should really start with a Shevet Halevi, who writes in Chelek Aleph Siman Reish Hay, and it's also in the Piskei Teshuvos, that when you eat chocolate in the middle of a meal, which you're now in, you should make a bracha over it, even though you wash for hamotzi, because it's not really part of the meal. To understand a bit more about the background of chocolate, to assist us in halacha, it's good to know a little bit how it works and its history. Chocolate comes from the cacao tree. There's got fruit which looks like a small pineapple, and inside the seeds are cocoa beans. These are roasted and winnowed, and the bean from the shell, which is called a nib, is then processed. Cocoa beans are half fat, so these nibs turn to a liquid when ground, and when cooled you've got unsweetened chocolate. The machine is called a conch, which refines it and stops it crystallizing, makes it into a paste, or after the fat is squeezed from the bean, it's ground to make a cocoa powder. There is the cocoa mass, and there's also cocoa butter. The butter is made from the fat. So when you look at the ingredients on chocolate, you'll often see both cocoa mass and cocoa butter. White chocolate is made solely from cocoa butter. Now, the actual chocolate as we know it only came around during the middle of the 19th century in Europe. It was started in about 1845, but for many hundreds of years it was used beforehand as a drink. The Mayas and the Aztecs of South America and the tribes there, they regarded it as a very special royal kind of drink, and they drank this bitter chocolate drink for many hundreds of years. And so for them it was like, you can even say like a chama medina. If you would have joined them for a Shabbos, you could have made kiddush and havdalah over a chocolate drink. In fact, the word chocolate comes from the Aztec word meaning warm liquid. And Rav Kahn of our shul actually suggests that the reason why the Shari Teshuva, whom we'll discuss in a minute, writes about chocolade as being the bracha of shahakal was because it was used as a drink for so many years. So when you use a drink which is made from some sort of powder, then the obvious drink, the obvious bracha is shahakal. The question is, however, whether you make shahakal over chocolate, which is a solid as we know it, mixed with sugar, mixed with milk, or maybe mixed with nuts and so on. Diane Krauss of Manchester fame wrote a sefer called Makor HaBrocha, and in it he comes to the view that you should say Bari Pri or Eitz over chocolate. And we'll have a brief look at that to see what the other opinions are. The bottom line is that the Minhag HaOlam is to say Shehakol. That's what we've all been brought up to do, I presume. But there are a number of issues which need to be discussed on this. Shulchan Aruch Arachayim in Siman Reish Gimel Sif Zayin says as follows: Besomim Shokim Umorovim Im Sukkar, spices which are ground up and mixed with sugar. Habasomim Ika, so the main part of that food are the spices. Umavorich Alem Kedin Bechas Osam Basomim. So you'll still make the bracha over those spices, whatever they would normally be the bracha for, which would probably be Propri Adomo. So since they are ground up, they haven't, as a result, lost their identity. Even though they're mixed with sugar, you will still say that same bracha.
But that's the only way you can eat those spices.
Yeah, there are different ways, but if we look at the Mishnah Berurah there in Sif Kof and Yud Beis, he says, "Hainu afka shem zchukim u'minimuchim legamrei." They are totally obliterated or melted, ad she'ein nikabahem, that you no longer recognize that they are from that spice. Nevertheless, The first identity, afilu hachilon nishtan espir chason. You don't change their bracha al yedezer. Lukule alma. The derech abbasam nichtosh b'mazeh, because it's the normal manner of eating those spices in that way, and therefore they will retain their bracha of adom or whatever it is. And so you could say, well, surely it's the same with chocolate. It's not the normal manner of eating the cocoa bean as a cocoa bean. It's sour, etc. So what you say is that it surely is that the way of eating the cocoa bean is by way of chocolate. So surely, therefore, the bracha should be bropi or eitz. There is also the idea of risuk. Back in Simon Reish Base, the Shulchan Aruch there talks about when something is crushed up, and the Mishnah Berurah in Sif Katan Mem Dalud suggests something similar there. Mem Dalud, he says, if you have a fruit where it's normally eaten as something which is crushed up, you make the bracha which it's originally intended for. Then he talks about diluin, a kind, some sort of cucumber, which is crushed up. And there is other spices which are crushed, which you mix with sugar. So there too, the idea of risuk does not necessarily take the chocolate away from its identity, so therefore maybe you should be making bropi or eitz. However, when we turn over the page and we look in the Sha'arei Teshuvah, there in Sif Katan Yud Tes in Siman Reish Beis, he says, we are knowing to say shehakol al kovei, which is coffee, the tei, Kaminaga Olam, that is the custom of the world, Vagam al Shokoladi. And he quotes from the Divrei Yosef, Simon Yudalad Lavorich Shahakal. He says that the bracha you make over coffee and over tea and over chocolate is Shahakal. So Rav Konshalita says that we can't derive from this Shari Teshuva a clear answer whether we really say shehakol over chocolate, because the chocolate he seems to be referring to is the drink which they've been drinking for hundreds of years in South America, and then which spread over to Europe, that this was a chocolate drink. It could have been a cold chocolate drink or a hot chocolate drink, and the drink is definitely shehakol. And it doesn't seem, from the way he's speaking, particularly as he refers to coffee and tea, which are, I mean, the coffee is also from the bean, right? So, and tea could be adoma. But there, the bracha is shehakol because it's consumed as a drink. So Rav Kahn actually discussed this with various gedolim, and he told me that he spoke to Rav Karolitz about it, who told him that he made shehakol over chocolate in front of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, who himself wrote an interesting teshuvah about the subject in his Minchas Shlomo Chelek Aleph Siman Tzadi Aleph, where he spoke about drinking chocolate and eating chocolate. And he says in his teshuvah, he refers to Siman Reish Beis as we've just done so, and he says, but chocolate is ochel gomor, it is an actual food, and referring to these spices which you mix with sugar, maybe you should specifically say bropi or eitz. And his view is perhaps yes we do, and he refers also in Siman Reish Beis Sif Zayin to tamarim, to dates which are crushed up and their identity is changed, and there also you say over those dates bropi or eitz. But in desperation of the current minhag or olam, he says it is the custom of the world to say shehakol. And Rav Kahn thinks that the reason why the minhag or olam is shehakol is because it derives from the original drinks, but somehow it carried on, and therefore he resigns himself to the fact that people do say shehakol over chocolate, even though in actual fact the correct bracha should perhaps be bropi or eitz. And he quotes, of course, Dine Krauss, as we've mentioned. Rav Eliashiv Zichron and Rachel also made the point of making bropi or eitz. Yes?
I was going to say that what you said before, that it was just the sugar plus the this, there must be milk in it and all other things.
Right, but what's the ikka? If you're getting the kick out of chocolate, it's got the caffeine in it, and you like the taste of chocolate, then even if there is a lot of sugar and milk and other ingredients, then in your mind the ikka is what is from the coffee, from the cocoa bean. And therefore, it's true, if we go butter over, you look at the ingredients on a packet of chocolate, usually the ingredient which is of highest amount is mentioned first, and subsequent ingredients are of the lesser proportions. And normally, when you look at the ingredients on chocolate, and particularly also these ones which are on the table, if you look at the ingredients, the first item it says is sugar. But it says cocoa mass, and then it also says cocoa butter. My wife's view is that if you add together the cocoa mass and the cocoa butter, it'll come to more than the sugar. And it's true that you do get nuts and so on. But nevertheless, that's the dilemma. The same Piscator Schuler says it's very rare to find more than 40% cocoa in chocolate. And therefore, his view is shehakol, as you say.
That is to say, where there's a machlokes of what bracha to make, then you shouldn't eat it at all.
Well, we can't do that for the tibble to stop them eating chocolate. I mean, chocolate is my favourite food. But on the idea, on this idea that it's been so many hundreds of years it was the custom to say chocolate, and so therefore it simply carries on that way, I can't help recalling the view of Rav Cooper Zatzal, who said that sometimes a custom has developed in such a strong way that it's not within our remit to start changing it much later. We don't always know what the kavanas were of previous generations, and if they instituted something and we carry it on that way, it's not for us nowadays to start stopping and changing it. And he said this to me in connection with a nusach of tefillah on Shabbos Rosh Chodesh, because in the Asa Yatzarto, it's very rare to see in Sidurim the phrase Kachenu b'mitzvah secho v'sinchal keinu b'saro secho, which is a Reilon phrase, Tali b'enu al t'chaves van chileinu, etc., ad kod secho. And he says, we're not going to chop and change, because according to the Aruch HaShulchan, it's a spelling, it's a misprint, it's a printer's mistake. The nusach Hari Sidurim have it, but the nusach Sfad and the nusach Ashkenaz don't have it. And the Aruch HaShulchan says one should say it, and the other Rabbonim say one should say it. Recently there's been some art scrolls coming out which have it in brackets, the Yesh Omrim. But Rav Cooper stressed this idea that it's not for us to start chopping and changing what our ancestors did. It's disrespectful, and if we have handed down to them a particular tradition, that is the way we carry it on, purely out of anova. That should be humility. We don't start chopping and changing. But the question does come up with other foods, such as jam. If you've got jam, which is crushed fruit, all right, you mix sugar with that. Do you say BPOH just over the jam? And the view is that if there are still bits of recognisable fruit on it, then you will say OH. But if it's perfectly smooth, then you will say shehakol. So this view of OH on chocolate is Dine Krauss, Rav Albach, Rav Eliashiv. But there are... Yeah, well, he concedes in his teshuva that that is the minhag ha'olam. But you can see that his lechachila view is that of OH. The other poskim say shehakol.
Didn't eat chocolate.
To clarify,
if the logic says,
he doesn't say what he was doing himself, but... His general conclusion about Kolponim, he says, Osam Shema Arim cocoa and sukkah yachad the ochlin nireshim harohu cocoa. If most of the ingredients is from cocoa, tsarichim vadai levorich barpio 8, then one should say barpio 8. It hasn't really changed its identity. And he's talking there about the spices like ginger and so on, which are crushed up and lose their appearance. You still say Berpio 8. The view of the Shevet Halevi in Chelek Zayin Chafnai is that you say Shehakol. That's Rav Ozna. The Oznidberu, Rav Zilber, you say Shehakol. The Tshuvas van Hoggis, Rav Sternberg, Rav Dain Embroy's brother-in-law, he says in Chelek Aleph, in Kuf Peizayin you say Shehakol, and the Igris Moshe of Moshe Feinstein in Chelek Gimel Lamed Aleph also talks about Shehakol. But if you say or ate B'dieved, according to those who say you should say Shehakol, if you say B'dieved or ate, you're Yotza.
Well,
Right. Rav Falk talks about an interesting phrase which comes from Rav Falk of Gateshead. Mipnei ma'aloso yorad. By elevating it, it's come down in stature. By elevating the cocoa bean, it's come down that you'll say shehakol. There are different views, but the minhag ha'olam is to say shehakol. So if you have liquid smoothies of various fruit, you'll say shehakol. But if you have an apple sauce, where it's like crushed apple, then the view is you'll still say ho'eitz. This is what the idea of risuk is. Is it a drink, or is it something which is like a sauce?
But does it make any difference whether it's in the solid form or the liquid form?
Yes. Yes, if you have a hot chocolate drink, then everyone seems to agree it's shehakol.
Because the chocolate that you get from this, it started off in liquid form.
It's
cooled down.
Yes, but it's only in liquid form because of its temperature. Yes, once you put it back to room temperature, it solidifies.
Yes.
So that is why there is some question about
melt
it.
This, okay.
Yeah.
If you were to melt it, which is different from a chocolate drink, because a chocolate drink is normally mixed with milk and whatever in life.
Yes.
So if you were to take bars of chocolate and melt them,
yes,
like fondue, then...
Yes, but when you're melting it, it's not a liquid in the sense we know it, like with a hot chocolate. When you have fondue, it's creamy like a paste.
Mm.
And so for those who hold hot eights, it would still be hot eights. And there, again, it's because of the temperature. Now, there is this view that when something is grown particularly for its purpose, even if your end product, you'll say shehakol, if it's grown for that purpose, then you'll still make the brocha even in its liquefied state. And the example from that is Tropicana orange juice. The oranges which are grown for the purpose of producing orange juice, according to the Chazon Ish in Siman Lamed Gimel Hay, you will still say a Bar Pior 8, because you will make Bar Pior 8 over oranges, although the Gemara will say that the juice of fruit is Zeob Almo, it's like sweat, and therefore it loses its status of Bar Pior 8 and turns into Shehakol. Nevertheless, there is a view, and this is brought by the Rashba, and Rav Cohn quoted this to me, and based on a Mishnah Berurah in Sifkot Mendalad of that Perek, then the view is you will still be saying Bar Pior 8. It doesn't seem to be, though, the universal view. Certainly, Reb Moshe Feinstein holds that because the appearance has substantially changed, it will be Shehakol. Now,
is that not the situation in applesauce? You mentioned applesauce, but it depends on what, if the apple sauce is made out of it, apples made for applesauce, then...
Then, yeah, if the apples are grown for that purpose, I'm not sure how easy it is to identify apples being grown particularly for the apple sauce, but if that is the case, yes, then according to that view, you will always say Bar Pior 8, but in any case,
cooking apples,
but in any case, with apple sauce, you still get that lumpy bits of apple in it. So according to that, in any case, you're going to say Bar Pior 8. It's when you've got a proper liquid, like orange juice, where the question arises. I mean, apple juice is definitely shehakol. It's Zeo Ba'almo. The big question which comes up in Poskim is when your chocolate is mixed with some other favourite food of yours. What if you're eating chocolate almonds, chocolate raisins, chocolate cranberries? Now, according to the view that chocolate is Bar Pior 8, it's not a problem, because Bar Pior 8 is on the chocolate and Bar Pior 8 is on the almond. So you'll definitely say Bar Pior 8. But because the minhag ha'olam is to say shehakol on chocolate, what do you say when you eat a chocolate almond? Do we say that the chocolate is there just to give an added flavour to the almond, and that the almond is the ikka, the almond is more nourishing, it's got zinc, it's got other minerals in it. The chocolate, you're right, might have some minerals in it, but really you're having chocolate because it's more of a junk food, but the almond is never a junk food. And what about raisins? Raisins are good for you, and if you have chocolate raisins, are you eating it because of the raisins, or are you eating it because of the chocolate? And then you've got cranberries also wrapped up inside chocolate. So what is the bracha that you say? Now, according to Rav Moshe Feinstein, he sees it as two different foods mixed into one. Although normally when you have one dish, you make a bracha over the whole lot, he sees it as two items which you really want both of. And therefore, he suggests that you might be making a bracha on both. But if you say, this is a problem though, because if you're going to say a Bar Pior 8, on the almond and the shakal on the chocolate. But which are you going to eat first? The chocolate is the bit which enters your mouth first. And if you say the chakal first, then surely you've included the oats. If you say that the oats should be first, because then that way you can say shakal afterwards, then you'll have to slice it up and eat the almond inside first, which starts getting a bit awkward. And in any case, surely if it's all one dish, then you'll make one brocha. Like, there's my colocus, like with fruit salad, if you have lots and lots of bits of that, apples and oranges and other hot eights bits, but then you have a little bit of banana, you don't pick out the banana and say an adomo. Rav Neshul Noivitz says this, and he brings this from the Bi'ur Halacha, who argues with the Chai Odom that you should make one bracha on the rove over the whole lot. Your fruit salad will be very pureed. Alright, if you have lots of melon and banana and other adomos which make the majority, then you'll say adoma over the whole lot. So this is a dilemma. Brachas can be quite complicated. Rav Chaim Shmulevitch was once not feeling very well in his bed, and he asked his Talmidim to bring in something easy to learn, and they brought in a Gemara Brachas. And he said, oh no, that's much too difficult for me. Anyway, the Debechina Rav, Rav Moshe Stern, writes in his Tshuvas Be'er Moshe, he says in Chelek Aleph Siman Zayin that you say Shehakol over the whole thing. He says, the kavona, he says, is really that you want the chocolate. And he thinks that the almond is ancillary to the chocolate. And so you get a charm from the... But not everybody holds that view. And it seems that various rabbonim from Eretz Yisrael, I heard Rabbi Avadia Yosef said this, says you say eights over the whole thing. Because the ikkar is really the almond. Maybe it's because the Americans like sugar so much and they've got a sweet tooth, so they see the chocolate as the main thing. So the Debechina Rav writes shehakol, whereas others will say hot eggs. The Oz Nidburu also says you say shehakol. He writes in Chelek Hay in Simon Samachay. Now the Sefer Pischei Halacha Ravos says it depends whichever you like more. He says, you can choose. You'll make one bracha, but you'll make it over what you want. You might choose to eat chocolate almonds because you know that you need the nourishment of the almonds. And at the same time, well, you'll make it a bit sweeter, so you'll have the chocolate surrounding it, just like you'll mix the sugar with the spices, as we said in from the Shulchan Aruch. So you're here mixing the chocolate, the sugar, with the almonds, and so you will say, right.
There's only need to be said because you can't see the almonds. Therefore you can't make the broccoli.
They don't say that. You know full well that there are almonds inside because
Rabbi Kahn touched on this a few months ago.
Yes.
This is talking about it. We discussed what things are called as well. So it's called chocolate covered almonds as opposed to almond embedded chocolate.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
That's right. And the argument in favour of that is that there is a tour in Simon Reish Base who talks about nuts fried in honey. And it's brought from the Rosh. You say berpi or eights. These nuts, which are eights, you disregard the bracha on honey because they are really nuts. And so why should there be a difference between nuts coated with honey or nuts coated with chocolate? All right, you could say honey is shahakal and chocolate might be hoits in any case. But the Taz in Sifkot and Yudalef there says that the nut is the ikka and the honey is there just for the extra taste. And the Mishnah Berurah there in Sifkot and Yudalef says that the honey is like a hechsher to the dovor. It's something to reinforce, to give a nicer taste. And the Prima Godim talks about sugar-coated almonds. And we get nowadays sugar-coated almonds, but they've been around a longer time than chocolate has. So there's a hardened sugar coating the almond. What bracha are you going to say? For a pure eight. And there are different opinions. The Miyom HaLocho, which is written by Rav Metzger Shlita, he seems to feel that you should say the bracha over the chocolate. That is the ikka. So you do get the different... Well, what about orange peels which are coated with chocolate? You get them on Pesach especially. You know, these chocolate-coated orange peels. What bracha do you then say? Well, since you're never normally going to eat orange peels on their own, then they are less in importance. So there the view is, from the same bracha, is that you will say shehakol because your ikka there he regards as the chocolate.
If you were to eat orange peel by itself,
then you won't say Berpi Oates because it's not Derech Achila.
Yeah.
Okay, people, yeah, it's true, but there are some ladies who grind orange peel or lemon peel and they put them on cakes. But it's true, it's not Derech Achila for oranges, so in any case, it's not going to carry a choshev brocha like that. Alright, what about the nach brocha? What about, we're talking about the first brocha, you say, what about the brocha afterwards? Assuming you're going to eat lots and lots of chocolate today, do you make, alright, your benching might include that anyway, but if you have a hot chocolate drink, what bracha do you say after it, if any? And the view of most poskim is that you're not going to make a nach bracha, just like you don't after coffee or tea, because you're going to sip it so slowly. You're not going to drink it in the time of Kadesh Shtias Revius, in the time it takes to drink a Revius. There are different opinions, and we have to be aware of those on Seder night, where we drink our Kos Yayin. It should be done in time for the Shia. I mean, there are different views. Rav Yisrael Belsky in America talks about 1 minute. Rav Zilba in Oz Nibru talks about 2 minutes. The Sefer Rivavos Ephraim suggests the time is 20 seconds to drink a Revius. Alright, some will say, Rav Osler brings down different opinions between 2 minutes and 9 minutes because the Achilas Pras. But it is normal practice, says the Maharam Shik in Arachim Pehe, to drink these things slowly, and therefore, since that's the case, if it's the normal manner to drink them slowly, then maybe you will make a nach brocha. But the psak is Mishnah Berurah in Reish Yud Tiv Tes, Tiv Katan Aleph, the Chai Odom in Nun Tes Vav, say you don't make a nach brocha because you're not drinking it in the allotted time. And this is Rav Avadia says this in his Yabia Ome in Chelek Hay Simon Yud Ches, and he writes at this in great length. He says the same about ice cream, where you have a lick and then another lick. You're not eating it in the normal manner where you bite into it and chew it and swallow it and make sure it goes down. So that is, you might offset the problem by sucking a couple of sugar cubes, but even sucking is a question. Because, you know, when I eat a piece of chocolate, I bite it, I chew it and I swallow it, but my wife never does. She always sucks it because she likes these praline Swiss chocolates and she gets a longer pleasure from sucking it. Well, there you'll definitely not make a nach brocha because you're not doing it in the normal kind of time span. And Yabia Omer Rav Avadia says this in Chelek Ches Simon Tafei, that you will not make a nach brocha from sucking chocolate. He says it's not the Derech Achila and it's not the Chdei Achilas Pras. So, well, our gastric appetites extend not only then from saying the brochas, but there are other halachas which are of interest when it comes to the subject of chocolate. And let's move over to Hilchas Shabbos, where there are a number of relevant malachas which might be important to be aware of when it comes to the subject of chocolate. And the first one we're going to mention is the malacha of lush, lisha, which is like kneading a dough. You should avoid making lumps with liquid, and therefore when you're making a hot, well, not necessarily a hot chocolate, because that has complications as well, because you'll make a keli shlishi, you don't want to do any cooking, so you will transfer the hot drink, the hot liquid from one to another before you mix any cocoa powder into it. But even if you're making a cold chocolate, this is more likely to happen when you make a cold drink, when you pour your milk or your water over your chocolate powder, it's very likely that you'll make lumps, and that should be avoided under the malacha of lush, lisha, making a dough. And the way of avoiding that perhaps is where you'll have your glass of milk and you might pour your powder slowly into it and stir while you're doing it, and that way you will avoid making any lumps. So says the Oz Nidbru in Chelek Hay Siman Yud Beis. What about colouring? If you have your milk and then you're going to make it a brown, is there an issur of colouring? And the psak generally there is ein tzivil ba'ochlin. There is no issur of colouring when it comes to things like chocolate or other foods, unless you deliberately want to colour your food. If you use specific food colouring for making something a particular colour, that you can't do. But otherwise, ein tzivil ba'ochlin, there is a das yochit or elech zechosh shlomo in Simon Kuf Lamadvov, who says you should avoid doing any form of changing colouring of food, but that is not the generally held view. Yes?
Are there people who put the coffee first to avoid that?
Yes.
To do with the water?
The other things, orange squash as well, rather than pour your glass of water and then put into it your orange squash, then they'll pour the orange juice first and then add the water, so it's not really changing a colour. But that is a chumra, it's not the din. The subject of writing comes up. Rabbi Yisrael Belsky writes that you can swirl around with some chocolate over a cake to make a topping, but when it comes to writing letters, you're not allowed to do that. Even though they're temporary, you do not do anything on Shabbos, even with temporary writing, to start putting, say, icing on cake, happy birthday, or the number of your years for your birthday. That you won't do. There is also the issue of cutting the cake, which has the letters on it, and you will try to cut between the letters rather than through them, even though they're temporary. And this is brought in the Siman Reish Mem Sifhei Mishnah Berurah Chaf Dalet, also in Siman Shin Mem in Sifkot Yud Zayin. The Mishnah Berurah talks about breaking the letters on chocolate. But if it's part of the food, very often you get pieces of chocolate where engraved in it you've got the name of the manufacturer, you've got some slogan or something like that. There's no problem whatsoever in breaking those on Shabbos, even though you're breaking into the writing. So says the Chazon Ish in Siman Samach Aleph, Sif Aleph, and Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa brings this down in Siman Yud Aleph. That you can break the letters embedded in the chocolate, because it's derech achila, it's not really called erasing, it's not a separate entity to the chocolate itself, like where you get icing on the cake. That's the contrast. There is another interesting malacha on Shabbos called memareach, which is toloto of memachek, smoothing, and that is spreading something. Can you imagine spreading tar or spreading wax? That is a proper malacha, even though it's a tolodo, it's a proper malacha to actually spread such substances on Shabbos. So the question arises whether you can do that with chocolate, because if chocolate is melted, and it doesn't take much temperature to just get it to melt a little bit, then would that be allowed on Shabbos to spread your chocolate, say, on your matzah or whatever? You are allowed to. Again, it's not shaykh with food. You can spread, just like you have chocolate spread. You might wish to spread that on your bread, on your challah. It's perfectly allowed on Shabbos. It's not called memareach. It's something which is the normal manner of eating your food. There is an even further malacha on which we could talk about in Hilchas Shabbos, and that is meleches tochein, which is grinding. If you want to take a hard block of chocolate and make a powder out of it on Shabbos, like scrape it with a knife and, say, put it that way over your ice cream or something like that, the question there is that called tochein? So the Ramah in Siman Shin Chof Aleph in Sif Ches allows the crushing of salt, which had originally been in a form of powder. It then became rather lumpy. So he says you are allowed to crush it up, because we say ein tochein acha tochein. There is no grinding after grinding. So it was once in a form of powder, then it became lumpy, so then when you are breaking it up, that's not called tachina. There are those who are machmir, but the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa writes in Simon Vov of his Sefer Yud Aleph that it's okay. Some are machmir to do it in a different way, with a shinoi, in a way you wouldn't normally employ. There's another question about chocolate, and that is, would it be bishul akum? There are some chocolates which don't come with an automatic hechsher, but you might find from a list or from the London Beit Din that they're okay to eat. So they are not prepared by Jewish people, or even the kosher chocolates. You might have factories which employ non-Jewish people. Is there a question of bishul akum? Well, the first question is it something which goes on Shulchan Melochim? Is it something which is served on the royal table? Would the queen serve it in Buckingham Palace at a dinner? Well, maybe she would, some delicacy of high-quality chocolate in a dessert. Maybe that is the case. Although most chocolates probably are not Shulchan Melochim. Rav Leibowitz writes, the name of Rav Belsky in a Kuntras, he writes just about chocolate. He says chocolate is not something which is cooked in water. It's not cooked in the normal manner of cooking. In fact, if you put water on chocolate in its preparation, you will ruin it. And we're going to discuss that in a minute if we got time, when it comes to the subject of kashrus and kashering machines. He says the chocolate which has a heat in its cooking process comes from the machines called conches, which create a friction from their rollers, and that creates the heat. It's an alternative method of cooking. And we say in Yaradeo, Simon Kuf Yud Gimel, Sif Yud Gimel, that when you've got an alternative manner of cooking, which is not in the normal manner, then there's no bishulakum. There's no question arising. Rav Vosner says that since chocolate is not something you would eat with bread, I know some of your kids might spread chocolate on the bread, but it's not something which you normally eat with bread, therefore it's not subject to bishulakum. Bishulakum is something which is an intrinsic part of the meal, so you're going to eat it with bread, and therefore bishulakum does not apply. Some interesting shailas come up about kashrus, because how are the machines kashered? You get some factories who manufacture non-kosher chocolate, and then they do a batch of kosher chocolate, which is supervised by a mashgiach. So they will be kashering their machines. But how do they kasher their machines if water is damaging to the chocolate? Normal kashering takes place with water. Any chocolate manufacturer will tell you that water is a disaster for them. And even if it's a kosher manufacturer, they might want to do a batch of parav chocolate after they've done a batch of milchit chocolate. And in order that that chocolate you can eat at a meaty meal, it's got to be labelled parav. So how are you going to change the status of the machines from milchit to parav? Originally, the OU in America allowed parav liquid chocolate to be run through their machines. And they said that could be regarded as a kashering process. And there are still various rabbinical authorities around the world who permit b'di'eved this form of kashering. The Ramah writes in Aruch Chaim Tov Nun Beis and says, hey, that you can only kasher really with water. But b'di'eved, he says, you can use sha'ar mashkim, other liquids. The problem with chocolate is that it's only in liquid form when it's at a higher temperature. Once that temperature is reduced, it's not a liquid anymore, it's a solid. But the Badatz in Yerushalayim...
That's true with all liquids.
But normal room temperature. Normal room temperature makes chocolate different. So the Badatz in Yerushalayim and various Hechsher in Europe, including Dine Westheim in Manchester, allow this procedure to kasher the machines by putting liquid chocolate, tariff chocolate through and doing that as a run, and that in itself can be a kashering process. However, Schmerling, whose chocolates I believe you have on the table in front of you, they don't use this as a kashering process. It's not Schmerling? Alright, Alpros. I think Alpros as well, they do kashering where they can't do it in any other way, they do it with Libun Kal, which is making a strong heat. Like using a blow lamp is a kashering process. It's more severe kind of kashering, which you'll normally do for things which have had a hotter contact. Kapolo Kachpolto, there's various principles about what sort of kashering method you can use. I mean, how do you kashering a frying pan, you'll never be able to do with water because it's in contact with heat, it's in contact with fire, so you'll need a blow lamp. So they will be using a kind of Libun Kal. And since the OU came across these problems, they have been using separate systems. And they also identified a problem with cocoa butter, that it doesn't clear out from the machines all the bits of milk chocolate, and you can't say bottle b'shishim, and therefore they ask for separate systems to be used. It does happen that you therefore do get various bits of milk chocolate found in dark chocolate. According to Rav Blumenkrantz Zatzal, who writes an amazing sefer on Hilchas Pesach, but writes about other things at the back, he says you could get up to 5% milk in dark chocolate, and this is not just a kashrus concern when it comes to milchik and fleishik, it's also, he says, an allergy concern, because there are some people who are allergic to milk, and that's why in Canada they require all dark chocolate made on dairy lines to be labelled that there are traces of milk possible. And therefore, according to Rav Blumenkrantz, all parav chocolate, in his view, should be considered as milky. Now, I don't want to terrorize you, because you want to have your chocolate dessert after your meaty meal. But it is a fact that many non-hechshed chocolates, which are called plain chocolate, do contain milk in them. After 8, Bourneville. For many years, people thought that these are plain chocolates and you can have them at meaty meals, but they do contain butter. And therefore, one must be very aware. The other problem that Blumenkranz identifies is glazing on certain chocolates, which you get on the chocolate raisins or chocolate peanuts or chocolate almonds. You get a shiny surface on the coating of the chocolate, and that's made with a glaze. According to Rav Blumenkranz, most of these glazes come from an insect of West Indian bugs. And he says that some rabbinical authorities might say, well, since this glaze on its own is not an edible product, therefore you don't have to worry about it. But others differ, and who wants to eat West Indian bugs when you're enjoying your chocolate? The problem that the chocolate manufacturers have is if you don't use this glaze, it reduces the shelf life substantially of the chocolate to no more than about 3 months. And that's why they like using the glaze. There are other problems with chocolate manufacturing. The Tzitz Eliezer identifies in Chelek Tessai and Simen Chalkei that chocolate generally is made with a milk powder rather than with milk. And he talks about the Swiss milk powder, which not all of it is supervised, but certainly is governed by government regulations that it's only for cows and that there may not be any additives. So he writes to Rav Avadi Yosef in Tovshim Mem Gimel that in his view it's okay. But the bottom line is that when you eat chocolate you should have a reliable heksha, because there can be countless problems. I once was in a certain shop in Golders Green before Pesach, and I saw bars of chocolate with stickers on them. Kosher la Pesach, Vashkochas Rav Yisrael Meir Levinger of Basel, Switzerland. And somehow the idea of stickers on the bars made me feel very suspicious. Because Switzerland, you know, they've got a huge chocolate market as it is, as you can see in front of you. And this was one which I hadn't recognized. And it just so happens that my brother-in-law and my cousin, Harry Goldstein, works for IGBER in Basel. And so I phoned him up and I asked him to speak to Rav Levinger, who was then the Rav of the shul at the time. He's now retired. And asked him whether he has indeed given this heksher to these chocolates. And I faxed him a copy of these chocolate wrappers. Rav Melinger was very alarmed about this. He said, I never gave a heksher to this firm. They did originally approach me with view to starting off supervision process and giving them a heksher, but nothing came of it, and I did not give them a heksher. And he was very alarmed about it, because on Pesach, even if the chocolate is kosher, that it's not chazatrei, virtually all chocolates contain lecithin, which is a kind of emulsifier. And it's made from soya, which is kitnius, which we don't eat as Ashkenazim on Pesach. And so he was very upset about it, and he actually asked me if I could put some announcements in local Jewish newspapers to tell people that no such heksha existed. But you know what it's like, people come to the shopping and they don't read the small print in the Jewish newspapers and they buy the stuff. One has to make sure that the heksha one gets is very reliable. Well, I thought I'd like to end off a share with quoting some Chazal about the subject that I'm doing. But, you know, looking through Chazal and Shas, Bavli, Rishalmi, I couldn't really find any references to chocolate. Rambam, Rishonim, what do I do? The earliest reference seems to be that Shari Teshuvah which we quoted, which is from the 19th century. But I did, with thanks to my son Danny, come across a moshel of the Chofetz Chaim. The Chofetz Chaim writes a moshel about chocolate. He says that if chocolate, of course, being your favourite food, if you have a piece of chocolate and by mistake you drop it into some manure, some horse manure, would you pick it up? Would you wash it? Would you eat it? Definitely not. You would leave it. Even though it means so much to you, it costs money and it's your favourite food, you would not touch it. And he uses this moshel to teach us a lesson about which people you are mixing with, particularly when it comes to business. You might find it justified to mix with certain people who are shady characters and who are nasty rishoyim. He says, keep away from them. Don't mix with them at all. And this is his nimshal on the chocolate. And I found something else in a Sefer Megid Givos Olam, Mipi Rav Moshe Shpira, there's a Rav Yecheskel Sarna Zatzal, who talks about people who are Oiv Torah, who give lots of money to yeshivas, and who are supporting Torah wonderfully. And he was told about this fellow who said he is such an Oif Torah that he gives to as many Torah institutions as he can. And Rav Sana asked, does this fellow actually learn Torah? It turns out that this fellow who is giving the money never ever actually sits down to a kavir to learn Torah, not even a small shir like a bagel breakfast. So he said this fellow cannot be called Oif Torah. He compared it to the subject of chocolate. He said virtually everybody likes chocolate. I do have a close relative, by the way, who just doesn't like chocolate. I can't understand it, but that is the metzias of the matter. But most people like chocolate. And when you get, say, lots of presents of chocolate, say, shlachmonos or whatever, yes, you will give some away. You'll share with others. That's the right thing to do. You share with others in your dormitory in yeshiva. You will share with chocolate with others. But when you've got chocolate, you keep some for yourself. You will definitely keep some for yourself. And Oif Torah is somebody who learns Torah as well as supporting others in Torah. And there's no way you can get away with saying you are an Oif Torah if you don't learn Torah as well for yourself, just as you will be keeping some of your chocolate for yourself as well. And so with the chus of that, and you will have great joy in eating chocolate, you will serve Hashem. We asked the question in yesterday's Sedra. In Parashas told us, why does Yitzhak Avinu want to have such a wonderful steak or whatever from Esav in order to give a bracha? Isn't this greedy? Isn't this gashmius? Isn't this materialistic? But Chazal say that we can reach a great height of simcha to do our avodas Hashem. He felt that to give the bracha with Ruach HaKodesh, he needs to be in a state of simcha. And because that meat which he likes particularly will give him simcha, that will give him the Ruach HaKodesh, that will give him the koyach to give a proper bracha. So just in the same way, when we eat chocolate, we should know that we're not doing it just gastronomically to satisfy our stomach, but it will give us a great degree of simcha, and with that degree of simcha, we'll be able to practice Avodas Hashem even more. Thank you very much.